Hi everyone, and welcome to this podcast on school management in pediatric diabetes. My name is Diyar Imadi and I will be your host for today. Today I'm excited to have Adam Lamendola back to discuss school management in pediatric diabetes. This is episode 2 of a 3-episode series about this topic. As I mentioned in the last episode, Adam Lamendola is a credentialed diabetes educator with over 18 years of experience working at Monash Children's University Hospital in Melbourne. During this time, Adam has developed a special interest in type 1 diabetes, technology, and pediatric education and management. Hello, Adam, and thank you so much for joining us again. I hope you're feeling well.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me today. Yes, feeling very good. And thanks, everyone, for listening to today's podcast episode.
Excellent. We'll get right into it. For today's episode, we'll be talking about the management of diabetes in the school setting. Now, from your experience, what do your pediatric clients associate with their diabetes management at school?
Yes, so I think initially following the diagnosis of obviously type 1 diabetes for a family and a child, it can obviously be a bit of an emotional sort of roller coaster for the family. So transition back to school can be one of the biggest hurdles I think a lot of families will initially sort of experience post the initial education of a diagnosis of type 1. So, and as you can imagine, families do have a lot of apprehension about sending their child back to school, particularly those in primary school or childcare or kindergarten, for instance, that they're very much more reliant on teachers or support staff to be able to manage the diabetes, particularly post-diagnosis or very early on the diagnosis. Therefore, I suppose what we sort of, the association really is probably focused really around supporting the family initially and to make sure that there is an effective and smooth transition back to school. And this will obviously include things like just, you know, the expectations of the school initially and what that obviously looks like and the expectations of the family and child and obviously the healthcare team and ensuring that there is that open line of communication and that everyone has the appropriate expectations of what obviously needs to be sort of met and included in that initial sort of process. Because obviously we really want to try and make sure that we support obviously the teachers when the children are going back to school initially. And a lot of that's going to be based around education of the teachers and support staff initially at diagnosis. Or post-diagnosis, I should say. So, you know, and a lot of that will focus in on around, you know, blood glucose monitoring, insulin administration in terms of, you know, whether the teachers need to be included in that or what role they need to be playing in that. Is it a supportive role? Are they administering the insulin? Are they supervising insulin administration? The same with blood glucose monitoring. So, you know, having that sort of understanding of what obviously a lot of that will look like is obviously really, really important initially. Making sure they have a diabetes action plan or management plan as well, and that's something or, you know, a legal requirement of schools and families initially starting with diabetes that we obviously ensure that all our kids are given diagnosis and obviously and forwarded on to the school. And obviously the school use that as a resource to be able to follow if the child's having a low glucose level or a high glucose level, they can sort of follow that action plan and also has sort of support and guidance in there. And then, you know, subsequently then supporting the schools with, you know, things like school excursions and camps. And again, just those expectations of what sort of does need to be met in the school environment initially, because, it can be a really challenging, stressful transition when a lot of the kids and families do get back to school. So, you know, we obviously want to make that transition as effective as possible. So, you know, ensuring that we sort of look at a lot of those aspects of that transition is obviously really important.
Yeah, now you've touched on the next question briefly in your answer, but from your experience and from your perspective, do teachers need any special training when they have young students living with diabetes in their classrooms and schools, whether it's day-to-day class activities or, as you mentioned, excursions and things like that?
Yes, ideally we would encourage all teachers and support staff to be trained to support a child with diabetes. Obviously, teachers play a huge role in the child's academic development, you know, and obviously have, you know, specific training to do this. You know, we provide the families and children with, you know, 5 to 6 full sessions with the multidisciplinary team, you know, at diagnosis and subsequently post-diagnosis. So, you know, and this can't be really replicated to the teachers in the same sort of fashion. So obviously trying to have a structure and a resource to be able to support the teachers in the most effective and structured way is obviously really important. So, but also making sure that, you know, obviously when the kids do transition, they're transitioning in a safe and effective way, which are clearly paramount in getting the kids obviously back to school. And as I sort of touched on, obviously a lot of this will be on the education initially. And what we sort of try and do is structure that, you know, ensuring that the teachers have access to online learning modules and resources initially, which would get all teachers to sort of complete when they have a child coming to the school with type 1 diabetes, that they've got an understanding around what type 1 diabetes is and the basic sort of management around what that sort of looks like. And a lot of the areas that we obviously do cover initially at diagnosis with the family is given in a sort of basic sort of online learning sort of structure for the teachers also. You know, so that's the initial sort of process we would look to do. And then the education, which we try and obviously get out to, you know, and again, this will vary depending on the service or the hospital or the treatment team with how they structure their education for schools. I mean, so the area that I sort of work in, we try and get out to the majority of the schools, depending if they're needing education, depending on the child and the age of the child and what the education will look like and the support the child obviously needs. So we may go out to the school and have a session with the appropriate teachers at the school to be able to ensure that they have an understanding around what is needed for the child when they go back to school. And what that obviously looks like. So ensuring that they have an understanding around like glucose monitoring and the type of monitoring that they're obviously wearing or doing at that particular point in time. So that whether it's continuous glucose monitoring or, you know, finger prick glucose monitoring, making sure they have an understanding around that. Obviously also insulin administration. So we ensure that we've got, you know, an understanding of what is needed there, the timing of that. And the side effects of obviously giving insulins, which will obviously include, you know, having hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, so that they have an understanding around a lot of that as well. So that's, you know, having that sort of all that focus initially with the education as well as the online modules is really important. And then obviously the role of the family and the parents as well in that education process. You know, what that might look like. Do the families sort of go, and quite often we might get the families to support the teachers initially in the first sort of week or two once the kids transition back to school. And that might just be, you know, in a supportive sort of fashion, whether the parents might come down at each lunchtime to support the insulin or make sure the child is giving the insulin appropriately with the support of the teachers or the nurse or the first aid officer at the school. As well. So looking at the role of the parental support that they also play, and then the role of the treating team subsequently after that for ongoing support as well. So we try and support the schools as much as possible outside of the school environment as well, so that there's ongoing support or advice needed if the school or the teachers are worried about the child's blood glucose level or their status at that particular point in time. Obviously, they have an open line of communication with the treatment team as well as the family to be able to troubleshoot and support each particular situation that may arise or occur. But and then also subsequently for ongoing things like planning for excursions, planning for school camps and what a lot of that will obviously look like. I mean, we don't want the children missing out on going to school camps or going on excursions clearly. So having an open line of communication with that and planning around that is obviously really important also. And that's something that we really try and focus in on initially with the schools in making sure that they're forward thinking a lot of the time with this and making sure that the treating team are supplying camp plans and, like I said, school management plans, things that they're obviously able to cover what's obviously needed, different sort of activities and different management that obviously the children are going to be undertaking during their school environment. Yeah.
Now, students go through many changes as they progress throughout their schooling years, both physical and emotional changes. How do these changes impact their diabetes management?
Yes, it's a good question. I think each stage can really vary with a child transitioning from back to school, and obviously this can vary from primary school to high school, and depending on the age of the child and the management of the child as well in terms of what that sort of looks like. And I think we sort of particularly find when kids in the younger sort of early ages of primary school prep in grade one and grade two, I mean, obviously a lot of the time they might be more reliant on teachers supporting their diabetes management. So, children might be more inquisitive around their management because obviously the teacher's helping them out with a lot of the management in the classroom, being able to interpret glucose levels and support insulin injections. And so, I think that we quite often, try and have an open communication around that and encourage the teachers to try and have that in a confidential, supportive manner in conjunction with the family around how they sort of do that. Talk about diabetes in the class so that the other kids understand what diabetes is and why this particular child is wearing a sensor, or why they're having injections, or why that, so that they've got that understanding, obviously, which can be really important, particularly in that sort of primary school sort of age where the kids are sort of learning around that. I mean, as the kids obviously get a little bit older, they're becoming a little bit more independent with their management, as they get to the later sort of stages of primary school. They can be a little bit more mindful of their peers, including inquisitive nature at times as well. So, and obviously their body's changing, their growth, they're growing, their intake is different in terms of their food intake, their activity is tending to be more active at school. So blood glucose levels are obviously changing as well. So that can then start to impact on their diabetes management a little bit as they start to get older, particularly around that sort of later primary school sort of age. The same thing go on school camps and parties outside of school. So there's a lot of change and variation in that sort of age group. So again, supporting the school around that and making sure that the schools understand, the different stages that those obviously will go through. And then again, this will vary again as the kids get into high school. There's obviously a lot more increase in dependence. They're wanting to be more like their peers when they're in high school. It's a time for major physical and psychological change as well. So, they've got hectic schedules, their schooling and sport and exams and friends. So, and quite often they just want to be like their peers. They just want to be like their friends and do the same things that they're obviously doing. So there can be more risk-taking behaviours, and glucose levels can start to get a little bit more erratic at that particular point in time. And that can not so much just be because of management, but can also be because of the role of puberty and adolescence obviously plays in that age group particularly as well. So so each stage, I think, that the kids will go through and that school environment will really vary. And, I think as they transition between each of those stages, making sure that the families and the schools understand that the expectations of the child and the expectations of the school and the expectations of the family will obviously continually change a little bit. And again, I probably can't stress enough that open line of communication between each of these stages is there as well to be able to ensure that, that the education, the school management plans are being completed, but also that there's, whether it's a meeting at the start of every year to set those expectations of what we feel the child can be doing. Do they need support with their injections? Can they be, independent in that supportive fashion at school? What the policies of each school also look like And that can be obviously quite varying as well, depending on each of the states of the children. So there are a lot of factors to sort of take in consideration, but generally speaking, we can try and sort of tailor most of the education structure around each of the stages as well.
Now, having covered technology in our last episode, I suppose I want to ask if there's any particular differences in outcomes between, say, using technology, that's CGMs and pumps, or using multiple data injections with just conventional blood glucose testing. Is there a difference in terms of outcomes, or does it just depend on the individual and, you know, how they want to manage their diabetes?
I think these days we're probably finding that most children at school will be wearing continuous glucose monitoring. You know, I don't think I would be, you know, out of fashion in saying that. However, I think there's probably not a particular treatment regime that is best in the school environment. I think it is very individualized for the child. I think that's probably the most important thing, that, you know, we can't force anybody to be either wearing a device or wearing an insulin pump or continuous glucose monitoring, or, you know. So I think that if we feel that obviously it is the best way to manage their diabetes, you know, we can give our best opinion that that's what we feel for that particular child, depending on their overall management and support of the family and the school. But obviously that's then got to be, you know, tailored best for, you know, that particular child and school, in that school environment as well. So, you know, I don't think there's the best regime. I think that it would just be based on the actual, you know, individual and their particular needs, and then obviously also having an appropriate management plan and structure around those particular needs as well.
Now, staying on technology, mobile phone use in schools is quite an interesting topic. You know, we know at least in New South Wales, they now have to be locked away when children go into school, unless, you know, it is used for medical purposes. So I suppose the question is, how do clients and parents and families navigate this kind of challenge when it comes to, you know, if their child is wearing a technology that transmits to a mobile phone, and they do have a mobile phone, and they might face some challenges, you know, in the classroom when their peers see them holding a mobile phone and, you know, they were forced to lock them away. Is it more of an education thing to the school and to the teachers and to the peers, rather than just a blanket rule over the whole topic?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think this is probably obviously a changing landscape, you know, in this sort of environment, because obviously, you know, the role of mobile phones in schools, you know, is a fairly blanket approach, in that kids aren't obviously allowed to have their mobile phones with them. I know in certain states there are different governing rules around the use of mobile phones, particularly in conjunction with school, in the classroom, or in exams and things. And I think that, you know, as diabetes educators, making sure that we understand obviously the education department guidelines around the use of mobile phones, and having an understanding around what that looks like for each particular state and territory is obviously really important. The stance on mobile phones, and obviously and a medical condition, you know, again, does vary from state to state a little bit, but I know that we, we encourage our children to be having a mobile phone. Obviously, you know, mobile phones are clearly used, you know, as the kids get a little bit older, and, you know, but obviously are more commonly used in younger children, particularly with type 1, that obviously we will sometimes see. And we're obviously quite used to having all of our kids rolling around with a mobile phone, you know, and it's obviously something that's quite different to the rest of the population in that sort of area. And so I think initially it's probably just again, it probably comes back to education. Initially, when they first sort of transition the kids back to school, that they're ensuring that the school, the classroom, have an understanding of what the use of the mobile phone is and the expectations around the use of the mobile phone. So it's obviously to be used solely for interpretation of whether it's glucose levels or their insulin pump, depending on what they're obviously using it for. So that's probably an initial sort of expectation that's met, but also, you know, and the role that also plays with, you know, the parents as well. Some of the parents might be wanting to see the glucose data from their own mobile phones at home as well. So ensuring that the kids have their mobile phone with them obviously is going to be really important. as well. So it's an interesting sort of area. I think that will obviously change as technology develops, and you know, the use of mobile phones in conjunction with insulin pump therapy is obviously, I think, probably going to be a changing landscape in the future as well, where we're going to be using mobile phones to be managing a lot of, you know, and we'll probably do with some insulin pumps currently on the market. So it's, again, it's going to be a changing area that ensuring that there are appropriate policies and guidelines around these areas for, you know, and those guidelines focus on the role of the phone for the child and what those expectations look like and how they use the mobile phone in the school. It's obviously clearly not to be used for other purposes other than interpreting their glucose level or insulin requirements. And then the role of mobile phone for parents and the teachers as well, and making sure that's all really transparent. We find that's probably the best advice and approach with the schools, is that they've got that understanding of what it's actually used for, and it's not used for personal use. So it is a medical device per se, and that it's used for medical purposes to be able to sort of interpret the management and practice of the diabetes. So, and I think that with that open transparency of that, we probably find that's the best way to sort of manage that. But as I said, it's going to be an interesting area and topic as we sort of go, you know, or in the future, particularly because of the role of technology and what that's going to be looking like with type 1 diabetes in particular.
Now, as we know, there's a lot of stigma attached to diabetes, and there's a lot of work being done at the moment to try and remove that stigma. But at the current moment, and especially for school students with diabetes, the stigma is quite amplified. So is there anything that these school students that live with type 1 diabetes, anything that they can do to reduce the impact of the stigma? Like, they maybe, as you said earlier, be more open about their condition with their peers, talk to them about the devices rather than, you know, hiding them away and, you know?
Yeah, again, it's a really good question. I think it's a really relevant and a topic that we should really be talking about, and a topic that's obviously, you know, that is being talked about quite a lot now, which is fantastic, and something that we clearly encounter quite a lot, particularly in the pediatric environment, is the stigma associated with type 1 diabetes, and particularly in the school environment as well. And it's a topic it's a really tricky topic. You know, and I think that, you know, at the moment, I mean, all we, you know, what we try and do clearly is making sure that, you know, we discuss, you know, the role of diabetes with the teachers and the family and the child initially. And I think when we, you know, one of the things I think we really discuss when we're looking at things like continuous glucose monitoring and particularly insulin pump therapy, I think we really focus in on that is, are you going to feel comfortable, or, you know, how will you feel when you get the insulin pump out, or you have to look at your phone in front of your peers at school, you know, and how that will look and how you'll feel about that. And getting to talk about that and make sure, and clearly then we're able to sort of highlight any areas that might be highlighted during that conversation. We can then sort of focus in on a little bit more to make sure that the role of stigma is obviously reduced, particularly in that sort of transition, because we know that, and we've seen this obviously quite often, there's obviously a lot of people probably listening that would have seen this, where, you know, particularly kids are not wanting to get their insulin pump out at school because they're worried about what other kids will think or say. So quite often what then happens is they don't bolus for their carbohydrates at lunchtime or recess because they're worried or concerned about getting the insulin pump out. They're not checking their blood glucose levels at school because they're worried about what other kids will think or say when they're doing it. So, you know, and that can clearly, that leads to higher glucose levels and, you know, and obviously, you know, higher overall control of their management as well. So it's something that we're really wanting to try and focus in and talk about. And these are things, I think, with the role of technology these days, we're clearly able to see firsthand when kids aren't bolusing for lunch at school, or they're not bolusing in certain times when they're around their peers. And more often than not, the reason is because they're worried about what other kids might say, or they don't want to, or they don't have enough time, which is always one of the main sort of ones. But more often than not, it's probably that association with with not wanting to or trying to hide the diabetes a little bit. So I think a lot of what we do is probably trying to make sure that they feel comfortable with their diabetes. It's not something they need to be ashamed of, that they're open in the communication, as open as they want to be as well. It's not something that they're forced to be and have to walk around, you know, telling every single child that comes up or friend that comes up that they have diabetes, but it's being open that if the conversation arises, that they're not hiding from that conversation, that they're open with, you know, if they're using an insulin pump, they feel comfortable getting it out in front of their friends and having that conversation of what this is and what the device is and how it works and what they have to do with it. And I think a lot of that can sometimes come, particularly early on when the kids are at school, you know, in primary school, around the role of the teachers and the role that sort of looks like, you know, educating the other kids in the class around what that sort of looks like. And then as, I think as the kids get older, obviously it's just, you know, making sure they're comfortable in their own skin around the diabetes and making sure that they feel comfortable to be able to talk about the diabetes with their friends and peers in their environment to make the best transition. Because we do find that, you know, that clearly that the kids that are comfortable and, you know, that are able to sort of do all the things they're wanting to do at school in terms of giving insulin and bolusing at school with their insulin pumps and monitoring their glucose levels will clearly have, you know, at times better outcomes, you know, initially or, you know, in the short term with their glucose management in the school environment.
Yeah. As we always do with all our podcasts, we look for last words of wisdom from yourself, Adam. So do you have any last comments or advice for all of our listeners when it comes to diabetes in school or pediatric diabetes management? As you said, it's quite a challenging area, and so we, I suppose, need to sort of tailor our advice to our clients.
Yes, I think the school, and like a lot of areas, I think in diabetes, I mean, it's a changing landscape. And, you know, I think with the previous podcast of technology, it's a very changing landscape. And, you know, what we were doing 5, 10, 20 years ago has clearly changed. And probably type 1 diabetes in schools is no different. I think what we were doing 10, 20 years ago is clearly different to what we're sort of doing now. And definitely, you know, there are things we're getting right and there are things that we clearly still need to be working on and because it can be a really challenging area with how we best support teachers in managing or even supporting children with type 1 diabetes and, you know, how do we best tailor that education and tailor that structure of education for each of the for each you know, whether it's primary school or high school, and you know, and that's going to be one of the biggest things I think going forward with in terms of how we look at these areas and how we have that communication between hospitals and schools and other organisations with how we can sort of best be on the same page with supporting each of these. But I think that, you know, what I've found and you know, over the years is probably just ensuring that there is really an open line of communication between the school and the family and the team, because I think, you know, the information gets misconstrued or misinterpreted at times, and parents will have unrealistic expectations of schools as well in terms of what they should be doing, and you know, and sometimes obviously the schools can feel quite overwhelmed with some of the, you know, with what the expectations are when a child goes back to school. And so, you know, ensuring that there's education given, there's an appropriate structure of that education as well, and again, there's an open line of communication between the parties in being the school and the family and the child, you know, ensuring that there is a really good and key factors are being met in that transition back to school. But again, I think that going forward, this will be, it's definitely a topic that will clearly be, you know, in discussion and will be a changing topic, but one that I think we're slowly getting to the same page with in terms of that kind of support. Kids here at school.
Yeah, watch this space. Well, Adam, thanks again for joining us. I know we're asking a lot of you, but we do have one more episode to record with you. So until next time, we thank you so much for your time. And it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Many thanks. Thanks for having me.
And to all of our listeners, again, thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. As always, to get your CPD points, please complete the feedback and evaluation form, and you'll be able to download your certificate. So until the next episode, take care and goodbye.